Thank you, Santiago, again for the opportunity to be here. And Toronto, as Ali said, is also one of my favorite cities. Love to come here again and again. Today, I'm going to talk about scenario analysis and the data that you might generate out of scenario analysis. How do you model them? That's another problem. As far as I know, most of the institutions have been facing. And as far as I know, there isn't any good solution out there. So there have been some ad hoc approaches. Now, the paper is online, so you saw the abstract probably, and you saw the link of the paper. The paper is at the Wharton School Financial Institution Center website. Based on that paper, I'm going to present this today. In the course of this preparation, I thought that I should skip all the details of the mathematics. Although this is Field Institute, I should have kept the mathematics here. But then I thought, since all of us are participants here, mostly highly trained mathematicians, so let me just do some hand waving on the mathematics and then just bring the issues out. Because what are the issues of the modeling? What are the problems that we face? What way perhaps one could solve, and one such approach we have taken to solve that problem. I'm going to talk about the importance of the scenario analysis. Then I'll mention a little bit about the scenario data, the characteristics of the data, and then I'll jump into measurement of scenario analysis for operational risk exposure. There are three papers that I'm going to use. The first one is about 3 years old, although we revised it at 2008. It will be forthcoming pretty soon, a Journal of Financial and Quantitative Analysis. It's now through. We really suffered. Now it is through there. The second paper is that paper at the Wharton School. There is one other paper that is under review, means we haven't put it on any website, but we are still testing using some client data. We are trying to understand how it is working. This is like how do you generate and validate the scenario data? Because internal loss data, we all know how to validate. At least there is a system out there, there's a process out there. But scenario data, and we all know what's the problem with the scenario data. It's bias data, this and that, all sorts of complaints. But can we have a method to generate properly, or can you have a method to validate it? So there is a paper. It's a kind of a draft version under review. A lot of people are reading it. And there may be more than one co-author. I'm one of the authors. Once it is out, we'll put it at some place. Scenario analysis is not a new concept for the mankind. It is in existence since the beginning, I would say. And here are some of the examples. Asset pricing, financial economics. That's what we'll be using today. Defense, medicine, manufacturing, marketing, management strategy, market risk management. You just think about it. I was traveling 2 weeks ago from Washington, D.C. to Boston. And there was a gentleman next to me, and I was revising this paper, and he was staring at the paper, although he should not have been. These are all private documents. So he was looking at my paper again and again, and they said, "So are you in army?" I said, "No." "Okay, so why are you doing scenario analysis?" I said, "Okay, you tell me, what do you do in army? What do you do with the scenario analysis army?" And then he gave me all the wonderful, wonderful ideas that they have used for scenario analysis. He was giving me example for this Iraq war, Afghanistan war and all, that how really from the current state, which I will use that word, that they can really think what can happen, how can enemy attack, and what are the situation we will be, are we prepared for that, how we really safeguard ourselves. I thought it's great, and in fact he's going to send me a paper. And he gave me couple of key pointer, and I went to the defense website and I saw, wow, I wish OPRIS community can use some of those ideas to generate the scenario data in their workshop. It is absolutely mature. One other area is the management strategy. There is a school near where I live. I live in Boston, and there is a famous school called, named Harvard Business School, and they live with this all the time, scenario management strategy. In fact, if you go to the Harvard Business School website, in the Department of Management Studies, my cell phone. Thank you. So if you go to the Department of Strategy and Management Science, Michael Porter, for example, a big name, and you will see on his website there is so much discussion on the scenario analysis, economics and scenario analysis. We can learn. It doesn't hurt. So what is the scenario analysis all about? It helps us to rethink the risk, readjust our mental model, and prepare for the possible future events. Yes, that's easy. For operational risk, and perhaps every other risk, especially, you know, this after Fed did all this stress testing and everything, it's all about tail event. So you would like to know what are the tail events. Everybody has a good internal loss data collection system. I do not know any financial institution which doesn't at this moment. Everybody has spent a lot of time, a lot of effort, and it's really good. Many institutions have acquired external databases. There are several vendors. One of them is, of course, Worex. And then there's a Fitch First database and all. So they do have. Now, how do we use the scenario analysis to generate a good scenario data? We need to observe the scenario data is not actual data that has happened. It's a synthetic data. It's something that we think may happen. What if it that happened, how much should I prepare myself for today? That's all it is. That's not the data that has happened. So that's the, I think in my opinion, that was a mistake we made, thinking it is just another data like internal data and just mix them up. We cannot mix. In fact, it's not possible to mix this and this. And I'll give you a couple of actual situations. And then, of course, the regulatory expectation. Regulatory expectation said there are four data elements, 1, 2, 3, 4. And I must say, and this happened before I was in the regulatory world, and this is absolutely on the dot. Regulators got this piece absolutely correct. All these four data elements are important, and they all carry different information. We have to understand them, and we have to put them together. What's the current state of the data generation? And that's not a good news. So far I gave you more or less good news. But now some bad news. It's the rehash of the external data. Look some external data, put something. Sometimes overly specialized, not purpose driven. What for we are here? I know a couple of clients who, you know, called us and discussed this thing with us, and we understood what the problem they're facing. Used only to satisfy regulatory expectations. That's the sad part. That's really sad part. And after that, when they have generated something, some data, then they don't know what to do with the data. All right, what that, suppose I pile up data, what I'm supposed to do with that? How should I interpret that? Many institutions had a waste of time. They really wasted a lot of time and resources. So many man hours completing workshops and all, and then didn't use that data at all, or didn't use in a very useful way. So let's take a look at the scenario once again, another look. Scenarios are hypothetical. We need to understand that. Scenarios describe the process, because the people who are telling you about the scenario, they know where they live. They know their water very well, or they're supposed to be knowing their water very well. So they know their process, okay? They're telling you something about the process. They cannot give you all the data, but they're giving you some data. Scenarios should be thought with respect to their importance, desirability, and probability. There are three components. Importance, how important this scenario? It's not just to generate some number. Is this something that is sensitive? Importance, desirability, and probability. Scenarios, no question is biased because it is driven by human cognitive psychology. And that's nothing new with the op-risk. It's any scenario that the colonel, actually, by the way, the person who was sitting next to me, he's a colonel in US Army. He said, yeah, everything has to be biased. Everything has to be based on what I know today. And I am obviously biased what I know today, and I do not have that vision that I can see what can happen, but I can just guess few things. Scenario should consist of states, action, and consequence. This I added after I spoke to the colonel, actually. He taught me this thing. He said in the scenario, three things should be clearly there. One is the state. Where are you? What action you need to take? And if you take that action, what should be the consequence? So basically for us, where we are, what's the state we are, and then based on our action or whatever business we are in, okay, what kind of losses we may suffer. Frame the issue correctly. Typically in the workshop, I don't see they frame the issue correctly. Simplify number of states. Don't give them everything, just don't ask question, okay, what can be the loss in your business line? No, what can be a loss in the external fraud area? Within external fraud area, what can be the loss in the credit card business? Reduce, simplify the number of states. Allow for the trend and uncertainty component. Every state has a trend and every state has an uncertainty component. Allow for that. And then the most important thing, again, learn from the colonel. Isolate the drivers that will influence the outcome. There should be key drivers that should be clearly identified that you need to focus on. This scenario workshop is about this particular driver. So based on that, there can be something called predictable, less predictable, and unpredictable. Each of these will have very different types of probability attached to it, and so their severity. If it is something predictable, then I am almost certain I need to do different treatment. Less predictable, medium probability, another treatment. Unpredictable, complete tail event. Absolutely beyond 99.9 or above that, then I need to treat it differently. Here is what we do in our practice, and that's the third paper. And again, I benefited discussion with many people outside of op-risk world. In fact, some of them are psychologists and all, they really understand this stuff better. So you don't ask a question and just say, what can be the loss? There can be many different ways to ask the question. And in the paper, the third paper, which is not yet done, there will be many different ways of analyzing it. But I'm giving you two of them. One is a descriptive and exploratory. What do I mean by that? Given the causes, what's the effect? Okay, I know what has happened. What's the effect of it? Means how much can be lost. That's very straightforward. That's why I think most of our workshop is here, descriptive and exploratory. Nothing wrong in that. That's good. So we have done that. But then how do you validate that? Maybe you need to ask the same question in another way. And in our one little pilot project, we have found if you ask many different ways, you get, at least you can remove some of the biases or some of the uncertainty. But still there will be, that's the name of the game, the scenarios. We are just seeing something or try to vision something. So the same question you ask another way. Given the current state, means given that you know your business, what can go wrong and by how much? Okay, here you are not giving any of the causes. You are saying, okay, you know where you are, so tell me what can be your different types of losses in external fraud, internal fraud, so on and so forth, in the credit card business, retail business, and see, then you say, okay, out of that, one of them is this cause. Am I matching them over here or not? And there are many other ways to do that. Here is an example, quick example. Here is a event that in a workshop was given, okay? Event was there was some loss happened at a trading shop. Okay, 10,000 customers were affected because of system failure. The loss was $25 million loss, okay? And in the workshop they were given, they said, okay, in the descriptive exploitative framework, is that if similar event happen at your institution, what can be your worst possible loss and how often that can happen? Typically, the answer will come back with 10 million, one in 10 years, one in 15 years, those kind of things. Same thing, if you want to validate, or if you want to ask another way, then you can say, okay, given our current infrastructure, could such event happen? The first question. And if then they say, yes, that can happen, then if so, what will be the severity of the loss amount and how often? Okay, now you'll see, even though they are very similar questions, they're not much different, but the thought process that goes here and the thought process that goes here are quite different. And often you will see quite somewhat disconnect. So these are some of the things we are exploring in our third paper. I just wanted to give you some smell or some sense of the data generation problem in the scenario analysis. The way it is currently done, for a variety of reasons, I think it needs to be explored further. It needs to be refined further. But having done everything, you still will have the human cognitive bias. You can't remove that. Because we can't see anything even 20 years from now. Common pitfall, lack of diverse input, poor balance of participants at the workshop, developing too many scenarios, insufficient time for learning scenarios. This is what I find at many places. People go to the workshop, they never even paid attention. What for they're there. They are given some kind of a material before the workshop. They don't spend time to read it, prepare themselves. Scenario focus only on the pessimistic side. This is something we need to spend a little time. All the scenario workshops, they are all on the pessimistic side, as if we have to go for 99.99999. That's the tail event, I understand that. But there are other tail events before that too. We don't know, as she said, that we don't know where the tail begins. So anything large is a tail, okay? And before that 99.9 happens, 99.9999 happens, 99.9 has to happen. So let's focus on that. So they go to too pessimistic, generate some kind of data that by nature is a blow up, no matter which model you use. Lack of diversity of viewpoints, internal inconsistency in the scenarios. One scenario is trying to do something, another is trying to do something. Insufficient focus on the drivers. No focus on what's really driving each of the data generation process. With that, about the data, now let's jump into the model. So now, I'm going to assume that we have some data. And I'm going to assume that we have some good data. How to solve the bad data problem? This model is not solving that. This model is just taking the data, assuming the data is good, and then modeling. Just like if you are giving your internal loss data, you should be checking the data, but we don't check it. We just let somebody else check it, and we just take the data as it is, and we start modeling. So one problem is, at least it was an initial problem, the scenario data generated unrealistic capital. I don't know if all of you are aware that before the internal loss data model happened in 2002 and 3, many financial institutions did only the scenario data or scenario modeling because they didn't have any data. But after the internal loss data started coming in, they started merging with the scenario data, unrealistic capital, okay? Now here, let's understand why it causes unrealistic capital. So the same storyline just I gave you a few minutes ago. So the bank A generated out of the workshop 20 million one in 10 years, and the bank B had the same scenario workshop for the argument's sake, and they said 5 million one in 2 years. That's the bank A, this is bank B. Both of them have internal loss data collected for last 5 years. Okay. Now what will happen? Let's spend some time. If you merge this one in 10-year event with the internal loss data they collected for the last 5 years, you are making this scenario too severe because this is a one in 10-year event. But you only have the data in 5 years. If you just dump it over there, you made it way too severe. It goes other way. That is 1 in 2 years even. If you dump with the 5 year data, then you made it less severe. In fact, it should be more than 2 in this bucket for 1 in 2 years to happen. Now, one side remark, in our experience, we find that the most natural way people can answer a scenario question is severity, how big will be the loss, and a frequency, how often that loss can happen. I know in the scenario workshop, people are trying to generate many other formats, but I'm not sure those formats will be less biased than this format. And having said that, we are still in the process of understanding that. Scenario data is non-transferable. Suppose bank A has annual frequency 50 and bank B has an annual frequency 20. Even though suppose both of them has 20 million 1 in 10 years, that's not the same. His 20 million 1 in 10 years means almost like 1 in 500 data points, and this guy's 1 in 10 years means 1 in 200 data points. So you cannot just read the data just as it is. It is dependent on what's the annual frequency, and these are some of the things we are going to expand now. Sure. No. Good. Okay. Okay, just hang in there and maybe let's revisit. I'm going to address that. Typically the scenarios will be generated like that. That they will come back with this kind of numbers. So there's a 20 million one in 10 years, 20 million or 5 million one in 2 years or something like that. That's a typical practice. But then one thing we are going to expand on that. This 20 million is a point estimate, as you said. So now I'm seeing, or at least we are advising, that how can you come up with such a precise 20 million number? What does it mean? So you have to have some kind of range, you know.
There
can be more than one scenario. That's true. That's what you were saying? Yep. Okay, let's see. Maybe you are saying something I probably not getting on something. One thing is that here I just kind of aggregated all the scenarios. Based on these scenarios, there may be 10 different answers. So that one thing. Probability distribution, this one, 1 in 10 years. You are saying that based on this, sometimes it can be in the 1 in 5 years, sometimes it can be 1 in 6 years, sometimes it can be 1 in 10 years, different severities. That's a good question. Nobody has tried that way. Okay, but yeah, you can do that. And actually, in this, the method that I'm going to discuss at the paper, it will fit very, very nicely with that probability. If you want to say this is mean, this is my mean loss, and then some kind of a normal distribution around it or some distribution around it, yeah, you can do that. Yeah. That's actually different from what he's saying. That I have it. That's a different. I'm going to get there. That is a different from what he's saying. All he's saying is that you have just one probability. That expected loss and catastrophe loss is a different one. Let's get there. I think probably it will answer that question. And I think that will answer this one. So let's see what is the data integration model, okay? Data integration model, the earlier one was a bucket approach. They will put all the scenario data, internal loss data, arbitrarily chosen bucket, and then try to fit a distribution out of. So internal loss, severity, scenario data, I'll put it in a bucket, okay? This is what you are talking. In the scenario workshop, they come up with two number. One is the best case, worst case, okay? So they say best case is an expected value, worst case is, who knows, 99.9 value. And then they try to fit a distribution. So they say, okay, suppose if my distribution is a log normal, so best case is mu and worst case is 99.9, let me evaluate the two parameters. And the problem is in this effort, it's not clear how you have integrated, how you have really integrated with the internal data. That's one problem. That's not a big problem for me. My biggest problem is that you can only have one scenario per unit of measure. For one scenario, you have got one best case and one worst case. Suppose if I give you two best case and two worst case, how do you integrate that? So that's my biggest concern here. There are empirical approach there. The most ad hoc is the weighting approach. So they put some weight on scenario A, they put some weight on scenario B, weight some weight on scenario C, and then just add something there. And there are some kind of artwork there. Now here is something about the method that I'm going to discuss. So these are some of the methods that currently in practice, and this is how the data comes. And the data I'm aware of, it doesn't come with a probability distribution. If the data comes as a probability distribution, no problem in this method. We can do that. That's very easy. Now let's understand the scenario in the asset pricing world. Suppose Bank of America is trading today, which I think it is, $17.50 in the US market. Okay, but if you go to the CBOT, you will see Bank of America will have a call $25, $20, $15, and $10. There are four different, strike going on. So what are these? These are not the price for the Bank of America. These are the option price that you see. These are four different possibilities that Bank of America may have in 3 months' time, 6 months' time, or whatever. Okay. So each option is trading at a price which is nothing but a probability assigned to the Bank of America trading at the corresponding strike price on or before the option expiration. So it's a scenario. So in the asset pricing framework, there are some scenarios going on. Okay. Now, so how do I take the scenarios and price it? So suppose I know the option price for four of this option data, and if I merge this four option data with my stock data, that will not be a right thing to do. And that's what was happening, or it still perhaps happens at some institution. So, but what we need to understand here that there are certain states going on. So we'll never have $25 happening before $20 happening. $20 may not happen at all, but at least even in a tick by tick, even for a second or split second, 20 has to happen. So the point I'm trying to make that in order for the large loss to happen, some small loss has to happen. Okay, that way you get the distribution. The loss doesn't happen by itself. So 25 may happen. Bank of America may jump tomorrow 25, but then if you take the trading, tape that you can get from your broker, it will show that for a second it was $20, even for a second it was $18. The price for 25 option will always be less than the price for 20. The less than 20 will be less than 18 because probability of happening 25 is less than 20 20 is less than 18. So what about the price for 15 when it is trading 17.5? There is also probability going on. So probability is distributed around it. So we need to understand that this option pricing is nothing but a scenario. And that I'm going to use to integrate the current data, which is internal data set, and the future scenario data. And the technique that one can use is the change of measure approach. So what's the change of measure approach does? And for the sake of explanation, the change of measure came out of a famous theorem called Radon-Nikodyne theorem. And the Radon-Nikodyne theorem assumes that you have a sigma finite measure space. And this is, we're all mathematicians, so I hope I'm not speaking Greek. So I'll show that our measure space is a sigma finite measure space. And on sigma finite measure space, we can really apply Radon-Nikodyne. And if I can apply Radon-Nikodyne, that means I have got the change of measure I can use. So using the change of measure theorem, all it does, you can connect the future state, whatever is the future, like option. Option is nothing but a change of measure. Future state with the current state. You can relate the future probability of the state as a multiple of the probability of current state. So you know your current state. So future is nothing but a multiple of the current. And in the context of operational risk, the future state given in a scenario, we can then say, okay, what multiple of the probability or the probability distribution of the current state needs to be enhanced in order to take care of the future state. Now, those of you, if you are a measure theorist, then there is a concept in measure called hard measure for a unitary group. And there is a famous theorem called Peter Weyl theorem. Now, the hard measure is actually what the operational risk fits very, very well, because hard measure is basically, from hard measure, you can create your fast Fourier transformation. That's how the hard measure was created to begin with, okay? And it is, you can confine in a group. So basically, your each scenario is a group. And without losing you further, I would definitely see whatever work we have done. We have not used hard measure for our work, but that's a very natural extension of this work. So what's our current state? Let's understand our current state. Current state, we have got 10 years of internal loss data. Most have at least 5 years of data. In terms of internal data, institutions have made good amount of progress. In several cases, stability of the models are observed, even though, you know, we heard there are a lot of issues in the modeling, but by and large, I think institutions in many of the unit of measure, there are one or two troublemakers, but most of it are kind of stable. They have found some good way of doing it, and still it is exploring. But the reason I wanted to show you the internal data modeling slide, because all that we are going to do or trying to do on our scenario is based on this assumption that you understand your current state. And your current state is your internal loss, nothing else. External data did not happen at your institution. Internal data did happen. External data also some kind of a scenario for you. Okay, you want to put it as it is, you can scale it, you want to mix it, all your choice, but that did not happen at your institution. Your current state is your internal loss data. That's your current state. So whether you approach it through the external data point of view or as a scenario point of view, these are all your future state. Therefore, one can believe, at least I would like to believe, that for some period of time, okay, in a narrow window, for some period of time, that this internal data modeling will hold good. There are a lot of sensitivity, I do understand that. But I'd like to believe that at least for a year or 6 months till I reevaluate my internal state or current state, that's pretty good. And in the sense of market risk, we use a word called the future state has not been revealed. So till the future state is revealed means I see something different, okay, I would like to believe that I'm still in that current situation, whatever my internal data told me, current situation. Now, having said that internal data, some institution, actually one of my client, mixes with the external data. That could be the current state. If that institution believes no, internal data is insufficient to infer the current state, they use external data and they say, okay, now that's my current state, and from there I'm going to go forward with my future state, which is using the scenario. This you have seen, if you have read the Telltale papers, you have seen this thing. I'm not going to stress time, you know, spend any time on this, but there's a Basel document came out in July 2009, and in that Basel document, they used exactly that way in our paper, but the first time they forgot to give us credit. But then when we shouted, we said, oh, you took it from our paper, they said, oh, we forgot, okay. Then they fixed it. What is the light? This diagram you will see if you buy any asset pricing book and open the first page. I'm sure every first page, or now if not first, at the second or third page, this will be there. What is happening over here? Let's understand. This is your current state. Which probability you go over here? Which probability you go over here? And I obviously made it very simple. So you go, you traverse path, so you can come this way, or you can come this way, or you can come this way. There are so many different scenarios going on. And that's all the option pricing is all about. These are your all future state. They told you that, and you know that, and you observe in the market because they give you the price. So using that price, you are just inverting it. That's your current state. So remember one thing here in the node that I'm showing here. All these nodes are different time dimensions. So it is time 0, time 1, time 2, time 3, so on and so forth. In the case of operational risk, you have got current state, that is your internal loss data, or internal external mix, depends. Okay? And these are all your scenarios staying over here, and different probability assigned to it. There's only one time period, because we are not doing this modeling for, you know, time period for five times in between. Okay? It is 1 year period or 6 month period or whenever you do your next calculation for your current state. So it is only for one time period, the time period for which you are holding your capital. What are my event? Now my event is nothing but an interval on the real line. I'm simplifying because even though they gave me $20 million or something, that can be translated or that can be made into an interval. Since I am dealing with a continuous distribution, I cannot do a point estimate because point estimate will be zero, probability will be zero. So I need interval. Okay, I think it's a natural construct, but you may call it an artificial construct. But see, when it comes out of workshop, people say 20 million, but if you ask, and I've seen the results, there's a range over there. They cannot be that precise. So that's an assumption I'm making. So by what's my measure? My measure in this case is a probability measure. If it's a probability measure, it's a sigma finite measure. So by making it a probability measure, I solve all the problems that I may encounter in an abstract measure theoretic sense, because probability measure is one of the most well-behaved measures. So this is my measure. The definition of the measure is A to B, fx dx, that's my mu. So if I have internal fx dx, internal database fx, I get mu. But if I have introduced by the scenario, So the probability of AB given by internal data will be mu, but the scenario gave me a different probability. And typically, those two probability will not match. Okay? If they do not match, then in the paper we have shown that how systematically we can adjust the probability of each of these events as implied by the scenario. And we introduce a term called implied probability for each scenario. So our scenarios are A and B. Probabilities are given by AB FX DX. Adjust it one at a time, and then just make it the whole distribution, and the whole distribution will be the implied probability distribution by each of these scenarios. One thing is that one needs to take a proper accounting of that, because you may have two scenarios that may overlap. Because now for me, scenarios are nothing but an interval. So I may have 5, 6, I may have also 4, 7. So 5, 6 and 4, 7 are overlapping. I need to account for that. And that accounting we have done, I am not presenting this how we have done. Those are somewhat mechanical details. There is very trivial way of doing it, I would say. And we have given an example in the paper, actually. That in the main section of the paper, it is a little more theoretical, but we have given an actual example with the data that will illustrate how we are doing this thing. The point I want to make, we are not mixing. We are integrating the scenario data with the internal data, because we cannot mix. It is impossible to mix scenario, because scenario data is a future type of thing which never happened. You just cannot put it in the same bucket. Yep. Sure. Actually, at this point, in this slide, it is just an interval on the real line, because all the dollar values in the scenario will come on the real line. So no matter how it is, it is simply a severity piece of the scenario. So it is the outcome of that. It is a severity outcome of that particular scenario. Internal data already we have modeled it. She was talking about extreme value theory or something. So you have many different ways to model it. And no, the way we model, and good that she went before me, the way we model in our operational risk, we have a unit of measure. So we do by unit. Pick up one business line or event type, say external fraud, let's say event type. So within external fraud of a business line, let's say credit card business or retail business. So that particular unit of measure, so in that unit of measure will have their own internal data. So I already modeled that. That's my FX, whatever distribution I like it. Okay, so based on that, each dollar amount, okay, whether that data was observed in the internal data or not, but they are on the real line. So for that particular dollar amount, I do have a probability for that. So scenario comes back and say, based on some development or some data, they will come back and say that in this unit of measure, there can be one loss from 1 million to 5 million, and I'm just hypothetically giving you, 1 million to 5 million, one in 30-year event. Okay. That could be a scenario, but then it will come back as a number. Yes, internal data is already, I have modeled it. So external, now the scenario is separately, I'm modeling it.
The question is, you have to change the measure even for events within that
Sure. Absolutely. And if I know those, then I should, if last generative means futuristic, there are two types of loss. One is the loss that has happened. That is my internal loss. Okay, that's the loss that has happened. Others that I'm talking about scenario, those are the futuristic, those are some kind of a guessing going on, what may happen. That's the way the option, for example, you have a $40 option, 20, 30 option being traded, but the stock is being traded at $17, okay? So can you go to the over-the-counter market and find a $23.75 option? Of course you can. But that option, whatever price they will give you, that will not be outside of the range of the CBOT prices. Otherwise, it will be complete arbitrage. So that maybe unless everybody has a question. No, unless your question, I'll be more than happy to discuss this with you, unless some of you also have the same question. But these are good questions, by the way. So let's do a quick recap. And before I do a recap, with my profound apology, this is where most of the paper is all about. And I did not do any discussion, because I thought it's written in the paper. And I thought that you are all mathematicians. Many of you, if not all of you, know more math than I am. So instead of putting all the math symbols and all, even when I started talking about hard measure, I saw people are going out. So I thought, so, yeah. Oh. No, that is exactly the change of measure is doing. That job is done by change of measure. What is change of measure? That's the Bayesian approach. That's another way of doing it. But I've not seen that yet very effective. But this one is, there's no prior probability. The prior probability is already estimated. Already we know based on internal data. We already calculated that. So there is no assumption of prior probability. It's already taken care of. Now, change of measure is assigning a weight, saying that how much you need to lift that probability that you already seen based on the scenario data. And you can do it systematically. For each of the event, making sure that all the distribution gets uplifted at the same time. And maybe, you know, read the paper. I should have done more, little more. I thought, let me give you a little high-level view, and if you have some specific question, I'll be very happy to answer. But this is what I'm doing here is a very high level, given I only have another 10 minutes to go. So. Because I actually presented this one about a week ago at Bank of England, and I spent 1 hour 45 minutes, and there I went through all the details. So, you know, if you are interested, go through the paper. If you have any question, I'll be very happy to answer. So let's just do a quick recap. Internal loss data, CBOT frequency distribution, internal is our current state. That's an assumption I'm making here. Now, when I say internal, once again, it could be mix of external. It's up to the institution. Scenario data are the future state. Should any sum or all future state happen, how does the severity of frequency distribution should change? That's the question you're asking. That given in the scenario, should all, some, all, or any of them happen, how should my current state change? That's all we're doing. And the change of measure does that. Okay. See, when if you read my paper with David Babel, you might miss one point, or at least people told me they're missing, is that where you actually applied the change of measure? Well, change of measure is very implicitly applied, because your two measurable domain is the same, your real line. See, sigma finite measure cannot be a change of measure unless in the Radon-Nikodyne theorem framework, both of them are on the same domain. That's the change of measure. If the domain was different, look here, the domain, that's what I did. I brought everybody under the same domain. If I had domain for internal data is A and the domain for scenario data is B and I cannot bring them together, change of measure cannot happen. At least add-on nicodine cannot happen. And that's what we have done. The domain is, what's the domain? Domain is 0 through infinity. And incidentally, in this framework of the scenario data, it is possible to bring the domain together. There may be another way, if you generate, like say, worst case and best case, I don't know whether you can bring that into the same domain and you can apply the change of measure. I'll be very happy. I see you have very good questions, and I'll be very happy to discuss with you. In fact, that's what is the purpose of this meeting. Now, the method that is given in the paper, there are some. All models will have some shortcoming. So let me just go over a few of the shortcomings or some weaknesses, if I may. Ideally, one should test the future state even for the distribution. See what is happening. In some sense, you are putting the data in. When you read the paper, you'll see that we are extending the synthetic data and we're putting the data in. So you say, oh, you have a new set of data, you should really retest everything the way you have done the internal data. No argument there. I agree with you 100%. But let's then think about it, okay? You said that. What's the benefit, cost-benefit analysis? Most of your data actually came from internal data. And you added 5, 10, 15, 20. So really you need to go back and do log logistic, log normal, EVT, all sorts of tests. I don't think so. Especially if your p-value is so high, you will again come back and say this is log normal. Okay. Second point is that we are making, that's very important. Here at least we are saying, given that what I know now, okay, what I know now within a narrow reasonable range, 1 year, 6 months, what will happen to this, to my risk, if these scenarios were true? So in that sense also, I should not be doing retest of all the data. And think of this thing. Suppose you have a 100-year event, and again, it's like, you know, speaking something that I have not discussed, but just you, I ask you to trust me. The way this model is set up, and you can read in the paper, in some situation, you might end up with the 20,000 data points. Are you going to test that data? There's a famous book, Goodness of Fit Test, that D'Agostino, and D'Agostino lives in Boston, I spoke to him. He says, if you have this kind of data, any goodness of fit test for any distribution will fail unless it came from the seed of that distribution, because it's such a huge set of data. It is bound to fail. So are you going to do that? No, it's not worth. But if you still insist, no, I do have to do that, then I would say, you rather not use that method. Now, then the question arises that, okay, if you are keeping the same distribution, really, do you think the capital will change? If I just add 5 or 10 data points, you bet it will. And I'm going to give you an example. And that's you know who is doing that job? Change of measure is doing that job. And let me show you something. Given that I have got very little time left, let me skip all these things, evaluation criteria, all these things. Let me just spend a little time on this one. Here is a financial institution, a client of mine, kind enough to use their data, and the data actually is in the paper. And they, for one unit of measure, they used all these distributions, generalized Pareto, log logistic, log normal, bar, and GB2. Okay, and it so happened all of them is passing goodness of fit test. Some of them are very good, some of them are not so good. Log normal was the worst. Log normal was the worst, then GPD, then log logistic, then GB2, and the bar was the best. The bar type 3 distribution for this unit of measure was the best. Okay, they had 16 scenarios for that unit of measure. All right, and they did the 16 scenarios. They just model all the 16 scenarios using the change of measures. They followed our approach. Interesting thing is that for up to 12 scenarios, first two of scenarios, all distributions are the same. That is, change of measure doesn't do anything. And these are very serious scenarios. You can read the paper. I'm just taking the example from the paper. So for first two of scenarios, nothing is happening. All the actions are in the last four scenarios. What you observe that when you put the scenario in a group, it behaves like a portfolio. There is a group effect and there is an individual effect, as if there's a market and there's an individual stock. And you know who is doing that? The change of measure. The whole theory is such, they're bringing them together. They say, okay, combined effect of the scenario is X, but you individually, this scenario, you are contributing Y in that. Okay? So now, if I'd never had this four distribution, I'm sorry, four scenarios, I would have said any distribution, and since the internal data model bar was so good, I said, I'll still live with bar because they are the same. The game begins here. Look, the logistic is the best predictor. The lower the change of measure, better is the predictor. Logistic is the best predictor. And look what happened to the log normal. Look what happened to the GB2. The GB2 is a fat tail distribution. And it's a general class distribution, four parameter distribution. And GB2 was very close to bar. Incidentally, bar is a family within GB2. But the bar, you know, not as good, but the GB2 just completely jumped all over the places. How should we interpret this situation? How should we really interpret this situation? So this is more like evaluating the scenarios in the context of change of measure. There is one thing. We should interpret the scenarios in the following way. Either historical measure is inaccurate and inconsistent, not inconstant, inconsistent with the risk profile of an institution. That means historical measure is not good. My assumption of current state is incorrect. That's why everything just broke apart. Or scenario is impossible to happen. Even those four scenarios, they just went all out of the chart. That's impossible to happen given the current state because I believe I understand my risk so well, it cannot happen. Third alternative is absolutely possible. The risk of the institution is uninsurable. Those four, if the capital really shoots up, uninsurable. So instead of holding the capital, you'll be better off doing some risk management here, rather than holding the capital which you'll never be able to hold. If you believe that's the case, then you'd rather go and do better risk management. So with that, I'll just jump everything and come to the conclusion slide, and I'm right about the time. Subjectivity of the scenario process can be managed. Scenario data generation should not be only using external data. Then it's again, you are just focusing on somewhat historical. It should also take into account your business environment. Scenario data is generated following a proper process can be very easily modeled using a value statistical approach. One such is the change of measure. We believe scenario data is more well suited for institutional risk analysis than the direct use of the external data. There is one work, my co-author David Babel, he is interested in working on it. What is the last point? Let me spend 10 seconds, and I promise not more than that. Change of measure approach can help us to understand operational risk measurement as a problem of financial economics instead of pure data fitting. This is where we need to spend some time. I couldn't come this morning, and I saw the abstract, some wonderful presentation happened this morning, and I wish I could come. I had some health problem this morning. When I read that, this are all great, and we are all doing very good work. But we have to get out of our little data fitting mindset, data fitting box. We have to see from the financial economics point of view. After all, institutions are going to hold $2 billion, $3 billion. That's quite a lot of money. And we need to understand what is the financial economics part of it. And one such approach is perhaps to the change of measure. It was a very modest step. We haven't solved the whole problem of the world yet, but it's a very modest step just to take us out and bring us in the same framework of market risk, credit risk, and the operational risk. Otherwise, operational risk is way isolated. It's a little somewhere loss distribution approach. and often ignored. With that, I conclude. If you have any question, I'll be happy to take it.